The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Technology. Hi, I'm Dom Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. Joining me today on the panel are Thomas Anuro. Hi, Thomas.
Hello, Dom.
And Father Michael Gossett. Hi, Father Michael.
How are you doing, Dom?
Great. So let's jump right into the discussion this week. The first topic for our discussion is some news that just came out from... Well, it came from The Verge immediately, but it was a study done by the spam service, monitoring service, Hiya, and it was reported by The Washington Post originally, and it's that robocallers, and we all know what robocalls are, we all experience it, robocallers made 26.3 billion, that's a B, not an M, billion robocalls last year to Americans. That's just in America. I don't know if other countries experience this. Maybe they do. If you're a non-American who experiences it, you let us know about it. But that was up 46% from the previous year in 2017. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, I'm assuming you both get robocalls too, right?
Yep, every day almost.
Right. And it's become such a hassle that they report that many people don't even pick up their phones anymore. Don't take calls unless it's a caller ID. You know, someone in their address book. That's me. If I get a call and I don't recognize the number, I set it to voicemail. And if it's someone I need to talk to, they'll leave a voicemail. Yeah, and I'll call them back. It's become a scourge.
I agree. And I've been really proud of my carrier. They have an auto identifier that says scam likely whenever it comes in. So I can tell pretty quickly that it's not something I want to answer.
Yeah. I have a similar thing from AT&T, which I don't have my phone with me to look at. I don't know what I did with my phone. But where they actually contracted with one of the services, and I'm going to say I think it's Hiya, to integrate with their services to, like you said, to identify potential spam, potential telemarketers. I got one of those today. It came up and said, AT&T alert, suspected telemarketer. Well, thank you very much. Off to... After the spam folder or wherever it goes,
there you go.
And they also let you identify, like mark things as, like when you get it and it is a spam that got through, you can mark and say this was a bad call or whatever. But what do you think about so there's how do we deal with it, but also the question of how is this affecting how we communicate with one another? Is this changing your habits and your the way that you communicate with people using your phone?
I think it's such a amazing shift from, you know, someone, this will be for a certain age group, but somebody calls your house and you answer the phone and then it went to caller ID. And now we screen everything that we never just answer, which is smart, but also kind of scary. And I know for myself, I'm in that camp of, if I don't know who it is, I don't answer because, It could be anything on the other end. And I think in the article, the scariest thing that was in there for me, predicting that half of cell phone calls could be spam in 2019.
Yeah.
Half of them. And it's just like, what's the point of having phones if none of it's real? And I think that's that we've taken this thing that's made for connecting with people, and it's become something that is just, it's just a tool for advertising.
Yeah, well, or for tricking people. That's
or
the other part of
yeah.
it. Yeah. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that day before there were even answering machines in homes where if the phone rang, you picked it up. I mean, it's just what you did. And you said, hello, and who's calling? You didn't know who would be there. You know, it was taking a chance on anybody being on the phone, and often wrong numbers or whatever. But and then Then we went to answer machines where you could screen it. You could actually listen to the person leaving the message. That wasn't that long ago. And then we went to voicemail where you get the caller ID, but you don't hear the message until after they've left it. So you can't pick up in the middle of the voice. You remember doing, I don't know if you're old enough to remember doing that, where you pick up in the middle of the, oh, I'm here, I'm here. Oh, so you're screening your calls.
Yeah, I remember that. We have a dumb phone in our house. We have a phone that sits on the wall. It has no information on it at all. And my kids have all been taught they have to go and answer the phone and they have to say, hello, this is the San Jorge residence. May I ask who's calling, please? And so they've got it all down and they do a great job with it. And that's the way that they are interacting with the phone. And we made that as a conscious choice on our end.
That's interesting. Cause that's actually another element to this is so many homes do not have landlines anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
My wife and I, when we got married, we didn't get a landline. I mean, this was in 2006. We decided, we both had cell phones at the time, and we decided not to have a landline in the house because it just didn't make sense for us. And I've actually had a Google voice number since then. At the time, it was a different company called Grand Central. They got bought by Google. And that sort of acts as my landline. That's the number I give out, because it's easy to block people using it.
Right.
If people who abuse it, the number. But it's interesting that's part of the problem. Maybe is everybody's on their cell phone now. Everyone's on their smartphone and not on a landline, and that makes this sort of call more insidious because they find you wherever you are, instead of ringing through. One of the things that comes up is the we had the same problem with email. I don't know if you remember that spam mail, where people's mailboxes were just like most of your mail was this junk that nobody ever would want to look at. It's obviously junk, misspelled. And we kind of fixed it mostly. For my part, I don't get very much spam in my regular mailbox anymore. I have a Gmail account, and Gmail does a really good job of filtering that stuff into a spam folder. And I'm wondering, because at the time, before they got good at it, they were saying things like, in a few years, 80% of all mail, 90% of all mail will be spam. And they've sort of fixed that, mostly. I don't know if other people's experience is different. And I wonder if we can expect them to do the same thing with this. What do you think? I mean, is phone calling dead, or do you think they're going to find some way to fix this?
You think the technology has to be there, or there are ways to deal with it. But I mean, the spammers are getting smarter, and just I think the article mentions that they're spoofing local numbers, and I see that a lot where it looks like a Steubenville cell phone number, and then it's, you know, it's a robot on the other end. But I think this is able to be solved, and I wonder what if any sort of incentive to not solve the problem is there financially. Or maybe it's just a technical problem.
I think that there's ways to solve it, but then there's ways around it, and so that's the constant cybersecurity war is always the it's very much harder to create a good solid defense than it is for the attackers to find a way to attack. And it used to be that physical security isn't that way. You know, you have a certain limited number of points of access, whereas with the digital security, there's no limit to the number of points of access that they can have.
Right. The article talks about that the FCC is pressuring carriers to deal with it, and that there's something called the shake and stir protocol. Must have something to do with James Bond. To validate phone calls as they pass through the networks, and that's a big key. Is it's too easy to spoof a phone number. That's really the problem. Is because all of this is, it's not someone on the other end of the line picking it up and dialing. This is computers making thousands of calls a minute, in with these recorded lines, usually, whether it's, you know, a bad, one of them is the scam that's from the IRS, There's right. there's an arrest warrant for you. The IRS doesn't issue arrest warrants, folks. go to your local, send us the money, or we're sending the cops. Or the other one is the Chinese consulate. So do you ever have you gotten that one where you get someone speaking in Chinese?
I've missed that one.
I've gotten that a couple times. So it's a recorded voice speaking in Chinese, and it's usually a New York phone number, New York or DC. It was either 212 or 202. I can't even remember. But it turns out, I looked at, online, it turns out in Chinese they're saying, we're from the Chinese consulate. There's a problem with your visa. And it's aimed at people of Chinese citizens in this country. I mean, so they're sending out millions of these calls to capture just a few tiny percentage of people to scam them. I mean, that's the thing. So the big thing is they've got to go and they've got to stop the spoofing. That's the key.
Yeah.
But what do we do in the meantime? Do either of you have any strategies that you could suggest for people to do besides just not answering the phone?
It's the easiest.
Yeah. That's really the only one I can see. And the danger there, this is the thing that really bothers me, is that there's something in the bravery of answering a phone, the courage it takes to pick up the line and have a conversation with a real human being that we're losing. And we're losing it because, oh, well, I don't want to talk to a robocaller. I don't want to be upset about, this person trying to scam me or anything like that. And that's a real element that's being lost in human communication.
Right. Yeah. That human touch that you lose with texting, Facebook Messenger, all the other ways that we communicate. I mean, I suppose you could do it with an emoji on the iPhone.
Right.
We could talk via Memoji, but again, that's, you're losing the human touch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. There is something that's lost there, and I kind of hope that we can recover that. In fact, there's a whole generation of people much younger than any of us who just, they don't make phone calls. They don't call people.
Yeah.
If you try to call them, they'll get mad. They want you to send them a text, and that's it, because they want to deal with you on their terms when they're ready for it. There's a couple of apps I want to suggest to folks that are available both on iPhone and Android. One is called Hiya, H-I-Y-A. I'll put links in the show notes. And the other one is called Nomo Robo. Hiya has a working relationship with AT&T where they have a cooperation. And so AT&T customers can download a special version of the app for their phone. That's what I was talking about earlier. Nomo Robo is a paid service, but they also have a cooperation with Verizon to use a service for free on their service. So both of them they'll block certain calls. And for ones that they're not sure are spam, they will mark it for you. This is a potential spam call or scam, telemarketer, or whatever it is. So you can check those out. Those might be useful to you. Especially help those who are not as tech savvy in your families, your older, your parents or other people, help mm-hmm. them, because the scams really, they affect people like that more than people who listen to tech podcasts, frankly.
Right. Yeah.
So let's move on to our second topic then. Unless there's more to say on that.
I would say one thing before we do move on is that the advice there is to say Microsoft is not going to call you.
Right.
The IRS mm-hmm. is likely not going to call you and say that they've issued a warrant for your arrest. It's very unlikely that a big organization is going to call little old you and mm-hmm. expecting something right then.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I have elderly parents who have smartphones, and it's a constant worry and battle to make sure that I get messages or calls from them. You know, I got this message. I'm very worried and scared. What do I do? And helping them to understand, this, don't worry, just don't do anything with it. And sometimes I have to actually go over and look at it for them and help them with it. But yeah, you're right. That's a good point. The baseline expectation they're probably not calling you. Mm-hmm. In all likelihood. That's good.
The one that I see here that's been on the news and even people that I know is people, they pretending to be grandkids and asking for money. And that's not just annoying and potentially illegal, but pretty malicious to scare people that way. Pretend that you're a grandkid that needs money to get out of jail or out of another country or something like that.
And, right.
Yeah.
Yep. So our second segment tonight is on another story, a couple of stories that are related, but it's the topic is about the new censorship. Now, censorship classically is governments preventing speech by, free speech by citizens or in their country. But there's a new kind of censorship, which is online censorship by tech companies. And there's a couple of things that have happened. So for the first story that came up is YouTube is said that they're going to censor in-game videos showing certain kinds of behavior. And when I say in-game videos, so like if you play a video game on some of these consoles nowadays, like PlayStation or whatnot, you can record it, the action as you're playing, and then post it online. It's a very popular thing to do on YouTube, is to post your gameplay videos to show your prowess or a funny thing that happened in the game or whatnot. Well, this one guy is playing this new hot game called Red Dead Redemption 2, and within the game, there's this situation where it takes place in the Old West, cowboys and that sort, and this one of these cowboys is in town, and there's a suffragette harassing people standing by, yelling at them or something like that, to in favor of women's vote. And the player just kind of got fed up with it and had his character in the game hogtie and feed her to alligators. And oh, isn't this funny? He posted it, and then it got taken down, and then it got a lot of attention, and then the channel got restored, and then it got taken down again. And basically, YouTube said graphic content that appears to be posted in a shocking, sensational, or disrespectful manner is not allowed. And it also doesn't allow content that's intended to incite violence or encourage dangerous activities. And people said, it's a video game. I mean, it's pretty much what video games are, is cartoonish violence, okay? And that's another topic, whether that's acceptable or not. But you're talking about banning pretty much most in-game activity. So the question is who decides what is acceptable content and who doesn't? And the fact is there's a very little transparency about who makes these decisions about what the standard is and how it's going to be applied. And there's no real legal backing for all this, especially since these are transnational corporations and so many different countries' laws would apply. So I guess the question is what do we think is the implication for regular folk like us who aren't posting in-game videos for this sort of censorship of what they consider borderline content? What do you think about this topic?
Well, it's I'm not a gamer, but kind of the times I've dipped my toe into just like video game videos on YouTube, it's its own culture. And right. I think when someone is coming from outside of that, people can be shocked. And especially if you have, for example, a bunch of teenage or young adult guys playing these games with the language, and that can be surprising, absolutely. But I think you brought up exactly just like who gets to decide. We don't. We're at the mercy. When we have systems like YouTube or other social media like Facebook and Twitter, that we may think it's a democratic sort of place and that we post our material and put our things on there, but we're at the mercy of those companies. And in so many ways, they're the ones benefiting from us taking part by ad revenue and things like that. So I think it's a tricky situation of we want to use these things, and they're great, and they're free, and they're never-ending. YouTube is never-ending. But anytime we post on there, it's we're accepting their rules, and they get to make those decisions, whether they're logical to everybody, whether they cater to one group or not.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too, that like you have a situation like this where it's a game that is rated for a mature audience. It's rated for an adult audience because it's a Rockstar game. So it's that same Grand Theft Auto style of game where the intention is to be on the bad end of the law. And that's the video that's being taken down, where this is sort of the maybe not the directly expected in-game behavior, but it's definitely not outside of the possibilities that are there. And so, you know, it seems to me like a rating system on even the YouTube videos would make more sense than a just blanket, we're going to ban this, we're going to get rid of it. And the interesting thing is, like, the takedown wasn't targeted to the video. It was targeted to the whole channel.
Right.
And that bothers me in the sense that, well, you know, I'm always going to be careful about the thing I post. And it might be some of these guys, that's a huge source of revenue for them. They are YouTubers and they make money by doing that. And then to say that, oh, I made one mistake. And again, we don't know what that mistake might be, because again, this is expected in-game behavior. Suddenly my whole channel is taken down and all of this revenue that I had is just gone. And a lot of times you'll hear from these guys that there's no way to really appeal and understand why something was taken down or even know which video it was that got the takedown notice.
Here's a related thing, and this is where I get really concerned is right now it's like obvious people like Alex Jones and InfoWars is the big one where every major platform, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Apple, all of them have taken down his network from their services and essentially have silenced him. Because in this day and age, the only way to really get out there and to communicate with people is through the big, they call them the FANG tech companies, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google. Yeah, I guess that's it. That's FANG.
There you go.
I was unsure about the end for at first, but yeah, Netflix. But like, and Netflix doesn't really come into this per se, but the other ones it does. Where, you know, because Google owns YouTube, so if you can't be on those services, then you have no platform. You're effectively silenced. And whereas Alex Jones is, you know, most people agree is crazy conspiracy theories. What about the ones who are, you know, that we think are fine, but ideologically might be different from those who are the gatekeepers in these companies? So, for example, or even just mistakes that are made. So like just today, the newspaper of the Archdiocese of Boston had their Facebook page deleted by Facebook. They took it down. They appealed. They said, nope, deleted. Like it was suspended and then it got deleted. All they post there are the stories from the newspaper. This is pretty mainstream Catholic news content. So it probably has, they probably covered articles in such a way that run afoul of the way people at Facebook think about certain social issues like perhaps same-sex marriage or transgender ideology or some of these other things. And somebody flagged it as this is hate speech and it got suspended and taken down. That is what concerns me is what, you know, when these platforms are the only way we can communicate with people in a large scale these days, and yet who protects us? That's really kind of what I'm saying. Who protects our speech?
Oh, here comes the comic book reference. Who watches the Watchmen?
Exactly.
And it's a really interesting censorship because it's not necessarily Facebook saying, no, this is wrong. We believe this other thing. It's just gone. And
right.
It's very easy to miss that you're not hearing those voices. And I think like when we lived in an age of newspapers and kind of more direct communication like that, it was one thing. But now, when we rely on these networks to get our information out there, they get to decide. And it is kind of a scary thing.
I'd like to take a step back from it too. And I was reading an article recently about the people who do the censoring, who have to sit and look through and sift through all of these things all day, every day. And that's pretty much the entirety of their job. And I feel bad for them because you have to make a decision based on possibly a limited amount of information, or you have to dig into the entire depth of this possibly dark and very depressing history of posts from this person. And I can see getting a little trigger happy with it, you know, where after you've been doing it for a while, you read something that you just even normally would marginally disagree with and move on. You're like, nope, gone. I really don't want to hear that right now. I'm done. And just move on. And there's no way to algorithm for that. You know, there's no way to step back and say, well, if any of these sets of words appear, then this is hate speech.
They got in trouble for that because they tried to do that originally. And
exactly.
And it was way too blanket of a ban. I mean, it was way too, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, but it was way too broad of an application. Yeah, I can imagine that there is a lot of burnout in that type of position.
What a job.
Yeah. So it's a tricky question because these companies are so big and they're transnational. And and Thomas, you made a comment in our preparation document that they're becoming almost like nation states in themselves with laws and citizens. We are essentially citizens of these companies in a way. But we don't have the power to elect. We don't have a power to change the laws. We don't have, and we don't even control the levers of power through economic means, because we're not paying anybody for these things. And so we're sort of at their mercy.
And increasingly we are broadening their reach by requiring more and more often, you have to use Facebook to sign in. You have to use, our main form of communication is Facebook, just because everybody's there. And it's depressing in a lot of ways that we are voluntarily centralizing so much power into the hands of people that are shadows to us. We might see their faces on the news every once in a while, but we don't really know very much about them.
Right.
It makes me think of kind of the earlier days of social media when everybody had a blog and you were out there on your website or things like Blogger or, you know, LiveJournal or something, but you put your message out and there was a real variety and you had to go look around for it. The beauty of these big networks is that it brings it all to you. But we've given up so much of that individual freedom, and kind of like that analogy of citizenship. If you lose your citizenship, you're in real trouble in your country. But the same way, if you lose your ability to use these things, you're disconnected. You're disconnected from the world in a real way.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's so many, you know, you could disconnect from Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and even Google. But it's like it's the equivalent of going off the grid and living in a hut in the deep woods.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it, but it's a lifestyle change, certainly. And so much of how we connect with one another is through these services. I'm not a huge fan of lots of government regulation, just from a viewpoint, just from a basic, you know, ideological viewpoint of mine. But, you know, it makes you wonder how do we protect our rights? Because, I mean, and even just formulating the idea of a right to communicate, how do, you know, is this a new thing that we have to sort of come together and develop this idea of do we have a right to a platform of communication? It's an interesting question we're going to be struggling with for a little bit, I think. Any other thoughts on this before we move on to our picks of the week?
I think generally speaking, the real issue that we need to work on is a lack of technological literacy. Mm. Because the reason you have groups like Facebook and YouTube being able to amass so much power is that people are really scared of branching out from there because it's safe, it's usable, it works, it's reliable.
But it's also where everybody already is, and that's a problem
and
in itself.
And that's a big issue. But you can't step away if there's no opportunity. There are other social media sites out there, and I was on Google Plus, and I'm very sad that Google Plus is closing down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really upset about that. I've made some great friends there, but a lot of them have moved over to MeWe, and
right.
which is another fantastic platform. I have some major disagreements with the way they run things, but it's an alternative. And I've all but abandoned Facebook. My wife uses it now to communicate out Girl Scout things under my name. So she's just using my account. But I really don't. I have probably 400 unread notifications on there that just are going to stay that way because I'm not going back. But I still run into the problem all the time where something's asking me to log in by Facebook. One of my son's den leaders for Scouts, that's the primary way that she reminds people of upcoming events. And so I miss out on things, and it's difficult to, it's like going off the grid, but we really need to become more comfortable with branching out and trying some of these other things that are available and making good decisions based on what is available.
Yep. That's a good point. Thanks. Yeah. And we'll come back to these topics because they're perennial. They'll be more, it'll be in the news more, but they're important as well for people to think about the idea of how do you move to a new social media. It's a chicken and egg problem because until everybody goes there, nobody's there.
So
we should come back to discuss that because that's a good topic. So let's move on to our third segment. Maybe we could be a little less grim because these are kind of grim stories.
Yes.
let's do some fun picks of the week. Father Michael, I'll let you go first this time.
Sure. You mentioned earlier helping people who are less technologically literate. And so one of my favorite things that I recommend all the time is Google Photos. Now, as a caveat, you are putting your photos into a giant corporation's computer.
right.
So we all understand that, but for people that are running out of space on their phones and are constantly trying to deleting pictures and things like that, Google Photos, I have it on my iPhone. It's a great app for backing up your photos. As long as you're not doing the highest resolution, it's unlimited. All your pictures are there. Terrifyingly, you can search by face. And it has a very good search function. It makes little movies. It makes slideshows. You can make books. It does all that stuff. But I think especially for people, and it happens constantly that they overuse their memory. All their photos fill up their phone. This just takes care of it. It's easy to use. It's Google. So Google Photos is my pick.
That's a great pick.
I will say that it's a good one. And scary or not, I'm going to share a story about it. My daughter, who just turned 13, got her email account. She put a profile photo on for herself. I'm saying it. Everything's okay for her. I took a picture of her at a competition we were at the other day, and Google immediately asked, would you like to share this with, and gave her email address to me. So not only did it connect her, but it also connected to her email address, which was in my contact list. And so I had to take a moment and think, okay, this is all right. This is the way things are supposed to work.
right. We're making it easy for you.
Making it easy.
It may be Skynet, but it works really well.
Okay, exactly.
It'll know exactly how to email us that it's time for us to die. But, actually seconding on the Google Photos, because I have an iPhone, and so I use iCloud Photo Library. That's what I meant. For my photos, but I also use Google Photos because it's a second backup for all of my photos.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, if it doesn't exist in two places, three is better, but if it doesn't exist in at least two places, it doesn't exist. And what's more precious to us than our photos? So, yes, I mean, even if you have no intention of using it as your primary service, get it as a backup. So I second that. Thomas, what do you have for us this week?
Okay, so I went to a tech conference this last week, and we were talking a lot about, I think the three biggest topics were cybersecurity, VR and AR, and 3D printing. And one of my favorite clinics that I went to was about 3D printing in the classroom. And the person giving the clinic mentioned this awesome app called Clone 3D, Q-L-O-N-E 3D. It's available for both iPhone and Android. And it allows you to scan actual physical objects and create 3D models from them.
Wow.
And so you just print out a piece of paper, put it underneath the object, and then take your phone and just scroll around the object, and it takes pictures all along the way and then builds a 3D model for you.
And then you could take that to a 3D printer and print it out?
Exactly.
Wow.
And it really is apparently just that easy. I haven't tried the printing version of it yet, but I have scanned a couple of things, and it's really neat.
I guess it's a specially printed paper that you put under it so that it has reference marks?
Exactly. It's just like a QR code that you stick underneath the object.
Oh, cool. That'll be fun to try. I have to say that your pick last time got a lot of positive responses, by the way, the space launch pick.
Yes.
A lot of people had fun. I've been having fun looking at that. The Saudi Arabia has just sent up a satellite on Ariane space yesterday. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun to do that. But another great pick. Thanks. So my pick is an app for the Mac, or it's actually more than one app. It's SetApp, and it's a subscription service. It's like Netflix for apps or for software. And I resisted it for a long time because I looked at the list of apps that are in the service, and I said, I already got a bunch of those, and it wouldn't be worth it for me. And then finally it got to a point where I was paying subscriptions on some of the apps I was paying separate subscriptions, and then they had some more apps that I kind of would like to use, and that put me over the top. So it's $9 a month, or $9.99, and then you can do a whole year at a time and get a discount, whatever. And what it does is it you can download any of the apps at any time, and you just use it. You don't have to buy it separately. It just works, and it updates them automatically. And even to the point where I had like an audio file that someone had sent me, and I was trying to open it, and I accidentally double clicked on it. I almost never do that because who knows what's going to open. It offered to open one of the apps in SetApp that I didn't have installed because that will handle it. I'm like, sure. And it downloaded the app and then opened up the file. And I'm like, all right, this is great. So they have dozens of apps in all different categories. A lot of the ones that I've been using for years are in there, and I've replaced the ones that I used to have with the SetApp ones because it takes care of updating and all that stuff like that. So, you know, it sort of depends on your use case. Go to their website. I'll put a link in the show notes. See what apps they have there. See if there's ones that interest you, and maybe you'll look at the numbers and say that, you know, based on whether I'm paying subscriptions or I'm having to buy upgrades, whatever, that's worth it to me. So it's worth checking out. But this may be the future of how we do apps, how we do software for our computers. It's an interesting model. So I'd like to see this for Apple do this for the App Store on the phone. But just here, you know, you pay us $5 a month, and you can have any of the apps that are in the store.
That wouldn't work for Android at all, though, because nobody pays for Android apps at all.
Exactly, exactly. So interesting. So those are our three picks. Anything else you guys want to have last comments on that? I just want to take a moment before we finish to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Secrets of Technology, and in particular, by name this week, I want to thank Gary H., Mike K., Hector M., Karen M., and Isaac K. It's through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give and the donations of all of our patrons. They make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Technology and all the shows we do at sqpn.com. And if you'd like to join them, you can go to sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us this week on the Secrets of Technology. If you have any comments or feedback for us, you can go to sqpn.com/technology or the SQPN Facebook page and leave us feedback on today's show that you'll see there, or an email to technology@sqpn.com. We'll put links to everything we talked about in the headlines and that stuff in our show notes on sqpn.com. Please remember to like the episodes on your social media of choice, retweet them on Twitter where we're at SQPN, leave us comments. If you have not subscribed to the show, please subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, on YouTube, where you can hit the bell to make sure you get notifications when we upload a new app. Write a review. We haven't had any reviews in iTunes podcast directory yet. And those are invaluable for helping us get the word out about the show. And your sharing of the show with others is so greatly appreciated. We really do appreciate that. Help us grow our audience. So, until next time, Father Michael Gossett, thank you for joining me and sharing the secrets of technology.
My pleasure.
And Thomas Anhero, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to the Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.